The Maldives has been undergoing a lot of political turmoil over the last 10 years or so.
Maldives' political instability fueling regional concern. It's Wednesday, February 7th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, the Olympics are about to open in South Korea. Wild swings in Asian and global financial markets. Business goes online in Afghanistan. A smart flu thermometer and computer learning. It's all on today's VOA Asia. A political crisis is underway in the Indian Ocean island nation of the Maldives, and former President Mohammad Nasheed Tuesday appealed to India to intervene. The current president, Abdullah Yameen, on Monday declared a 15-day state of emergency after the Supreme Court revoked terrorism charges against several arrested opposition leaders. The government also seized the Supreme Court justice and High Court colleague.
I will be happy with any
Former President and opposition leader Mamoun Abdul Gayoom, who was among those arrested, and insists that he has done nothing wrong. Speaking in Sri Lanka, Nasheed called on New Delhi to send an envoy backed by its military to release the detainees. India intervened to halt a coup d'etat in 1988. David Brewster, a security analyst at the Australia National University, tells VOA's Victor Beatty why President Yameen felt he needed to act.
President Yameen was under threat by a number of rulings from the Supreme Court, which would have required the release of the opposition leader and various other opposition leaders. The president has responded by arresting any opposition leaders that are in the Maldives and imposing, in effect, martial law and arresting the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court.
This is a tiny country made up of hundreds of islands. Is this something that should be concerning to countries in the region?
Yes, it is of great concern. Although Maldives is a tiny country, it's in a very key strategic position in the middle of the Indian Ocean, in effect between India and the U.S. base at Diego Garcia. The concern is that President Yameen in recent years has been getting very close to China and that China might be seeking to build a military base in the Maldives. That would be seen to threaten both India and the U.S. position on Diego Garcia.
Is this current dispute or crisis, if you will, a new phenomenon to the Maldives, or has it experienced political unrest in recent years?
The Maldives has been undergoing a lot of political turmoil over the last 10 years or so. But this is possibly the most serious manifestation of that unrest. In effect, a coup and a complete disregard for the rule of law. So it bodes ill for the Maldives. The real question mark in all of this is what will India do? India is the major power in the region. It is, in effect, the security provider for the Maldives. It has been for many decades. And Delhi has to decide what it can do and whether it should seek to intervene in the Maldives to restore democracy.
The United States said it was troubled and disappointed by the state of emergency declaration and the failure of the government to obey a lawful Supreme Court ruling. Noting his alienation of the opposition since taking power in 2013, the United States called on Mr. Yameen to comply with the rule of law and restore the rights of the people and institutions of the Maldives. These are among some of the top Asia stories getting the most views on VOAnews.com. Sanctions test limits of North Korea Olympic participation. Vice President Pence on possibility of meeting with North Korea. We'll see what happens. Hong Kong's High Court overturns convictions of three pro-democracy activists. Mercedes in China issues apology for quoting Dalai Lama abroad. Following foreign trash ban, China fights its own waste war. Expanded coverage of all these stories and a whole lot more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our website, voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. North Korea's participation in the Pyeongchang Winter Olympics Games is set to begin this week and has brought about a temporary pause in its nuclear and missile tests. For host country South Korea, these peaceful developments validate its support for greater engagement to peacefully resolve the nuclear crisis on the Korean Peninsula. The United States, however, remains skeptical of the North's charm offensive. VOA's Brian Padden in Seoul tells us the Trump administration sees this charm offensive as an attempt to undermine international support for tough economic sanctions.
At the Pyeongchang Olympics, North and South Korea will march together under a special unified flag during the opening ceremonies. They will also field a unified women's ice hockey team. An all-female North Korean cheering squad known as its Army of Beauties will be on hand to support athletes from both countries, and the North Korean Samjeon Band Orchestra and other artists will perform in both the Pyeongchang region and Seoul. For South Korean President Moon Jae-in, this inter-Korean Olympic cooperation is part of a broader diplomatic initiative to peacefully resolve the North Korean nuclear standoff.
We have to lead North Korea into a dialogue of denuclearization as well, which will also improve inter-Korean relationships.
However, in South Korea, there is increasing opposition to Moon's Olympic engagement that conservatives see as unilateral concessions to the repressive North. The U.S. also views the North's Olympic cooperation as an attempt to improve its threatening image and weaken international support for tough international sanctions.
I think this is a distraction. I think this is doing what North Korea has always done, which is when things get hot, start talking.
U.S. President Donald Trump has pushed for a maximum pressure policy, emphasizing tougher economic sanctions and possible military action to stop the North from developing long-range nuclear missiles that can target the U.S. mainland. But North Korean leader Kim Jong-un remains unwilling to even talk about halting his country's nuclear program. To underscore its defiant stance, North Korea is expected to hold a massive military parade on the day before the Olympics opening ceremony that may show off the long-range missiles it has been testing. President Trump was noncommittal when recently asked about the prospects for peace after the Olympics.
We're going to find out how it goes, but we think the Olympics will go very nicely. And after that, who knows? We'll find out. We're going to find out pretty soon, I suspect.
The U.S. and South Korea have suspended joint military exercises for the Olympics, but indicated they would resume soon after the Games, despite a North Korean demand to further suspend the drills to support improving inter-Korean relations. And there is increasing talk in Washington about launching a bloody-nose limited military strike in response to the next North Korean provocation, despite the risk it could spark a deadly conflict in the region. Brian Padden, VOA News Seoul.
Happening now in Asia, a magnitude 6.4 earthquake rocked Taiwan Tuesday. Authorities said at least two people were killed, more than 100 injured as the quake toppled buildings and damaged roads. The U.S. Geological Survey said the quake was centered 13 miles north-northeast of Huailin on Taiwan's east coast. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us on VOA Asia. U.S. stocks opened sharply lower Tuesday on the heels of sell-offs earlier in the day in Asia and Europe, and one day after the Dow Jones Industrial Average shed the most points in one day in its more than 120-year history. Earlier Tuesday, Asia's benchmark stock indexes collapsed as Monday's massive sell-offs on Wall Street rolled across the globe. Before the U.S. market rebounded at the close, Asian markets were caught up in the ripple effect of Monday's 1,175-point loss on the Dow, marking the biggest point decline in the history of that index. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Jacob Kierkegaard, senior fellow at the Washington-based Peterson Institute for International Economics.
Jacob, thanks for being with us. Tell us about this ripple effect and why Asian markets are so affected by what happens here in the United States.
Well, I mean, the United States stock markets have traditionally been the bellwether for global stock markets. This isn't just an Asia phenomenon. We saw exactly the same play out in the European markets. It basically reflects the fact that the United States stock market is the most liquid in the world, and of course the general dominance or importance of the U.S. economy in the global economy.
When the Dow lost 666 points, that drop followed a solid jobs report. It showed the U.S. economy adding 200,000 jobs, wages rising at the fastest pace in the decade. Why has such seemingly positive news led to such negative movement in the markets?
This is the key part. I mean, this is good news. The fact that the average American worker is finally taking home approximately almost 3% higher wages is really good news. But it also means that combined with the recent very significant tax cuts passed by Congress, that there is, in the views of many market participants, now a risk of overheating in the U.S. economy and therefore inflation, therefore higher interest rates, both in the long end of the yield curve, but also from the Federal Reserve, ultimately leading to a repricing of the stock market. But it is ironic that good news leads to a bad stock market outcome.
And that's nothing new, right?
No, I mean, this is a normal phenomenon, although I will say that it has become significantly more pronounced since the Great Recession. We may finally be on the cusp of leaving that state, which we had been in pretty much since the end of the recession in 2009.
Is this a stock market correction as far as you're concerned?
Yes, it is. I mean, I think we have had a significant run-up in the markets. We've had a lot of record closes over the course of the last 2 or 3 months. But it doesn't change the fact that overall the U.S. economy is producing close to full, it is at full employment. It's close to capacity, if not at capacity. So the real economy is quite strong. You would expect, combined with a sort of strongly synchronized global upswing, which we're seeing around the world, that the U.S. stock market would be doing well. But perhaps in the eyes of some market participants, with the significant tax cuts coming on top of all this good news, that, you know, we may be in for a bit of a sugar high.
In your opinion, has this phase of volatility come to an end after a couple of days?
No, I mean, I'm actually of the opinion that this kind of volatility will continue for quite some time because, you know, there is a real risk, in my opinion, that inflation will pick up in the United States quite significantly, something that will lead to potentially significantly higher interest rates. And this undoubtedly will be quite painful for a lot of firms and a lot of individuals that may or may not have taken on a lot of debt during the last decade, where, of course, interest rates have been close to zero, so they haven't felt much of an interest rate burden. But those days may also be over, and therefore repricings are in my opinion, necessary in that scenario, and it's a real risk. And that risk isn't going to disappear just because we may regain most of what the market lost yesterday.
Do you predict this is a worldwide phenomenon around the world, everything continuing like this?
I think it is the volatility of the stock market, I think, will actually be more of an American phenomenon because the reality is that the U.S. stock market is more aggressively or higher priced relative to corporate earnings than stock markets in other parts of the world. Therefore, the U.S. stock market valuation is more at risk for this type of repricing. But it doesn't change the fact that if you have a very volatile or violent swing or significant in-day decline, that effect will be felt around the world, no doubt about that.
Jacob Kierkegaard is senior fellow at the Washington-based Peterson Institute for International Economics. Jacob, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars, the hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on the Voice of America.
this news alert from VOA Asia. The Trump administration is leaving open the possibility of a meeting this week in South Korea at the Winter Olympics between U.S. Vice President Mike Pence and North Korean officials. Before flying to Japan, Pence noted that President Donald Trump, quote, has said he always believes in talking, but we'll see what happens. Visit VOA Asia Facebook to see what's happening in the world. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, the challenges of growing online businesses in Afghanistan and the best place for economic freedom are the topics of this week's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
Online shopping in Kabul, Afghanistan is struggling to find its place in a market fraught with both potential and peril. Entrepreneur Shah Faisal took a gamble 3 years ago and invested his entire savings of $3,000 into an online clothing business. Since then, his sales have soared from one or two a week to more than 100 a day, and Faisal employs 20 people. Shah Faisal is the founder of the online store Arzan Kemat.
It's a change that has to come, irrespective of if I'm doing it or someone else is doing it. And now, alhamdulillah, there are, I think, around 70 to 100 other online stores.
The nascent e-commerce market in Kabul struggles with unique challenges. Gridlock traffic, potholed roads, and a confused maze of streets with no names and houses with no numbers make it difficult for delivery men to arrive on time. Safety also remains a serious concern in the war-torn country. Sarajuddin is a delivery man for the online store Arzan Kemat.
Once I was delivering an order and I was stopped at a police checkpoint and all my orders were messed up because the police frisked me and they opened the entire thing. It wasted a lot of my time, and when I reached the customer, not only he did not accept the order, but also scouted me and used swear words.
Currently, less than one-third of the population can access the internet, but a new generation of tech-savvy entrepreneurs is intent on growing the online market, even as bomb attacks and terrorist threats continue. Hong Kong has taken top place in the 2018 Index of Economic Freedom report, issued by the U.S. Heritage Foundation. The foundation is a leading conservative think tank based out of Washington, D.C., that has supported conservative action on environmental, immigration, and foreign policy issues. The report measures 12 components. Hong Kong achieved scores of 90 or above and 8, getting top scores in the areas of fiscal health, business freedom, trade freedom, and financial freedom. The Heritage Foundation says Hong Kong also scored high points for its government transparency, regulatory efficiency, and openness to commerce, all of which underscore a vibrant entrepreneurial climate. Singapore came in second and New Zealand third. The United States was ranked 18th on the index. The report was met with enthusiasm by Financial Secretary Paul Chan, who reaffirmed Hong Kong's commitment to free market principles, judicial independence, and a level playing field for all businesses. Hong Kong has been ranked the world's freest economy every year since the Index of Economic Freedom was first published in 1995. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Japanese media say the palace has announced that Princess Mako's wedding, planned for November, will be delayed until the year 2020, citing lack of time for preparations. Mako and her college classmate Kai Komuro announced their engagement last September. Mako is Emperor Akihito's oldest grandchild. Don't postpone your visit. Do it today at VOA Asia Facebook. Now on VOA Asia, this year's flu season in the United States is the worst in 15 years, and health officials predict there are weeks of sickness ahead. One company's smart thermometer is tracking how the flu is spreading across the country in real time. As VOA's Michelle Quinn notes, it's gathering data every time someone takes a temperature.
Now, open. Good.
That most common of household medical tools, the thermometer, is getting a makeover. This new Kinza smart thermometer isn't just taking a temperature, it's also uploading the data it collects and telling parents what's going around.
How do we help someone at the first sign or symptom that they're getting ill? How do we help them respond? As a byproduct of that, we get to collect early indicators of illness and track the spread of disease in real time.
This year, the flu is hitting the U.S. particularly hard, with Missouri and Kansas among the top affected states. Health officials say more than 37 children have died, and the number of people seeking care is still rising. When a parent uses a Kinza thermometer, the child's temperature uploads to a smartphone app that asks questions about the child's symptoms. Already in 500,000 homes, Kinza receives 25,000 readings daily. Users receive individualized health information while tracking the illnesses in the region. Personal information is stripped from the data and then sold to companies that make things like cough and cold medicine, disinfectants, and orange juice.
They want to know where, when and where illness is striking on a general geolocation basis, because they can do digital marketing, because they can do inventory planning.
Pulling in the real-time illness information across the United States, if we look at which states have the highest week-over-week change, you see the same plain states at the top of the list. But the Southeast is actually an area to watch. That's where we're seeing the greatest pace of change.
Kinza officials say the firm plans to go global by building a living map of where and when disease spreads. This little thermometer could help doctors spot the next epidemic as it's happening. Michelle Quinn, VOA News, San Francisco.
Incorporating technology into learning can sometimes be a slippery slope toward computer distraction. VOA's Kevin Enix tells us that's why some of the best new educational tools work in the real and the virtual world.
It's easy to see this as a simple video game about being stranded on Mars.
Wow! Why is the sun and the sky so red?
Mars is called the Red Planet because it's covered with a lot of rust.
But it's more than that. This new technology is also designed to engage kids with rockets and rovers in the real world.
The fact that, you know, the time length on Mars is different to what it is on Earth, and when sunset and sun rises, and then he's got to go away and build himself a space station using kinetic sand and some very sort of simple materials, and then build a rover, which then it comes apart and becomes a rocket, and then he has to fly back home to Earth.
Other new educational products also have computer and real-world components.
What we found was, on the one hand, you have some amazing construction and STEM toys like Lego and many of the new coding programs and toys out there. And on the other hand, you've got some very sort of open-ended DIY projects.
That same idea is being used by Kevin Thompson, who turned to the language of instant messaging when he set out to create a music learning program.
It's fun, it's accessible, it's simple and trainable, so it's FAST, F-A-S-T. And what we're doing that is, kids love emojis. There are 6 billion emojis sent every day. So the emojis are the modes. So A, B, C, D, E, F, G are the letters. A for red apple. Or the modes, Ionian, is happy. So if you're going to play a happy tune, you'll start off with the happy emoji.
But it's not just emojis. The Velcro pads have different textures, so each chord or note feels different. Thompson says that engages more senses in the learning process.
So you can feel the chords you're playing as a major or minor or a seventh. So I reckon within 7 weeks, the kids can feel what they're playing, they can hear what they're playing, they can see what they're playing. So you have a multi-sensory experience.
These two learning tools and others are on display this week at the British Educational Training and Technology Fair in London. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We'd like to remind you that you can find our program in many different places, iTunes and SoundCloud for one, if you happen to be online. You can download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. We also invite you to stream our program at voanews.com. That's our website, as well as our Facebook page at VOA Asia. And as always, we want to hear from you. Send us a message. Facebook is a great way to do it. You can message us there, or you can write us an email, voaasia@voanews.com. We'd love to hear what's happening with you and in your part of the world, so be sure and contact us when you have a chance. We also invite you to listen to VOA Asia on the radio if you happen to be out and about anywhere in Asia. U Radio of Hatay University, FM 101.25. Hatay University in Thailand is a great place to hear our program. We thank everyone there who is listening, as we thank our director Tracy Carter, engineer Dan Crafton, managing editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Bird. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day.